Bashing government handling of public sector pensions used to be the top of the list for wannabe MHKs looking for an easy vote-winning target. So what, if anything, has changed? The deficit between the contributions and payments will be around £48 million this year. That's slightly less than the net spend for the Department of Infrastructure. So it remains a substantial sum. But the Public Sector Pensions Authority argue that the Tynwald-approved plan is getting this under control. I'm joined in the studio by PSPA Chair Jerry Carter and CEO Catherine Brondon. So, public sector pensions for most people are basically the fact that we pay in terms of overall taxpayer contribution towards public sector pension through the deficit and the amounts that we pay in terms of employer contributions. That's substantially more than all the small departments of government, with the exception of DOI, health and education, all the other departments put together. That's an awful lot of money that the Manx public is spending. Can that be justified?
Yes, indeed it can, because it relates to everybody who's been in the public sector receiving their benefits, which is a lot of people who have worked in government for a long period of time. And when you compare it to a small department, this is a large number of people receiving their pensions who've built up their benefits over 30 or 40 years' service within the public sector. So it is a big number, but it reflects the large number of people who have been working in the public sector and the number of people who are entitled to their benefits.
And work has, you know, this is not just a thing that people talk about from time to time. Often it's talked about at election time, mm-hmm. and then nothing really is done about it, and it just continues to become a bigger and bigger number. That isn't the case, is it? People are doing things now to try and address this.
That's correct. I mean, we're pleased to be here today to talk about the PSPA's current consultation with public sector pension scheme members that actually proposes to improve the level of pension benefits and, for one scheme, reduce the contributions that members pay. And this is obviously a position that we haven't been in for many years, because since 2012 and even before then, the PSPA has been reforming public sector pension schemes. And by reforming, we simply mean asking scheme members to contribute a lot more and employers to contribute more, and in return for reduced benefits. So what we've been doing since 2012 is working towards pension schemes that are more affordable and more sustainable for the longer term, because there's a reason why we need pension schemes. I mean, everybody knows why that is, to support public sector workers into their retirement and ensure that they have a good level of income in retirement and don't have to rely on other state benefits to support them through then. So that's really, really what we've been trying to do, is to get that balance right. Obviously, we're very cognizant of the impact on the public purse and how it may feel essentially to those residents on the island who aren't in the public service. But as Jerry said earlier on, there are over 20,000 individuals on the island that are either currently benefiting from receiving a pension in return for their work in the public service, or those that, as part of their terms and conditions and expectation working in the public sector, have a pension as well. But the pensions that employees are building up now are a lot reduced compared to what they were when they were working in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. So we've done a lot since 2012 to reform the schemes. And the reason why we're here today, as I mentioned in the beginning, is to talk about cost sharing. And cost sharing was a mechanism that was introduced in 2020 that allows, which asks our actuaries to look to see how costs of pensions have changed over a six-year period. And if those costs in pensions have gone up or gone down, there's a saving or an increase to members' benefits. And what we've found since 2016, that was the period we measured from 2016 to 2022, that costs have actually reduced. So the cost-sharing scheme, the PSPA has to consider those those results, which it has done over the last 12 months or so, in consultation with Treasury, staff representatives and unions, and also with Council of Ministers as well. And they've the board have decided that those cost savings will be used given back to members in the way that we're going to increase the way in which the pension accrues. But the key thing to bear in mind that the cost sharing scheme is prescriptive, and it will only permits those changes to be in place for 8 years until the next cost sharing review is done. And it's quite likely, I mean, you can't predict the future, nobody can. The way we do cost sharing, it's dependent on a number of financial and other financial assumptions and other demographic assumptions. So it could be in another 8 years' time when we do the next cost sharing that there might not be a saving again. There might actually be an increase in cost.
And of course, 2012 was perhaps the biggest and most radical yes. reform that public sector pensions have had, wasn't it? That basically brought a number, not all, but a number of the public mm-hmm. sector pension mm-hmm. Schemes together into the unified scheme, and a much fairer balance between, in terms of the amount that was being paid in both by employee and employer, that was a fairer balance was struck at that stage, wasn't it?
Yes.
And since then, has the gap in terms of the deficit in public sector pension funding, has that narrowed or widened?
Perhaps it's a good way of looking at this is the gap is coming down. The gap has come down significantly, but there are two issues here. There's the funding gap, the legacy, which is the gap that has built up over 40 years, where there were really very low contributions, certainly up until 2012. And it happened. I don't think we should be playing the blame game, because the Isle of Man's public sector, we had to be competitive with the United Kingdom and the private sector. And the United Kingdom, in fact, our Superannuation Act 1984 basically was to rubber stamp what the public sector were doing in the United Kingdom. So we wanted a first-class infrastructure. We want good police officers, doctors, nurses, journalists even, all manner of people. And it was vitally important to the growth of the Isle of Man that we had a very good infrastructure and a good public sector. Now, unfortunately, as has been the experience in other jurisdictions, nobody was really looking ahead to see what the cost was. So as a result, we have this tremendous imbalance, which we, the funding gap, the legacy gap, call it what you will, that will come down for a variety of reasons. It'll come down through time when people pass on. It'll come down due to inflationary figures. Inflation will inflate a lot of the debt away. And in respect of the cost sharing, that relates to the current position, to the people who are paying in now, who will be getting their benefits, and it's assessing the cost. And the cost of the pensions that is anticipated to enable them to achieve their benefits, that's calculated. That's why we have the cost sharing. So the cost of doing that is divided, and if it increases, it increases. If it decreases, it decreases. There's a formula that was approved by Tim Wald, I think, in 2020. Mm-hmm. And one of the concerns that the board had was that people in employment budget very well on the whole. You have your mortgage to pay and you have your pension contributions. And if there are wild swings, if the dynamics are such that the pensions increase significantly or decrease significantly, that can have a profound effect on people who are members of the scheme who are budgeting for paying their pension. So one of the areas we looked at was, rather than decrease the contributions, which might just as easily increase the next time and leaving people in as a hostage to fortune as to what might happen, we felt that a fairer way to achieve this would be to increase the accruals so that every month you're still paying in the same amount for your pension, the same way you'd like to know what you're paying in your mortgage and so forth. Now, with we'll come on to the teachers a bit later, because their figures were a lot sort of, the reduction was a lot greater.
And in terms of the unified scheme, yep. the schemes that still lie outside of that, yep. Teachers, is that the most prominent, or what other ones are there?
Teachers is the largest, yep. And then there's the two police pension schemes.
Right.
And the judicial schemes sit outside.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, going back, I mean, if we finish the history lesson first.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. If we go back to 2012 and probably the 6 or 7 years in the run-up to that, government faced a bit of a double whammy. First of all, interest rates became exceptionally low, unusually low, and unexpectedly low, I suppose, for a considerable period of time. And added to which, of course, government had to renegotiate the VAT revenue sharing arrangement, which meant that substantial sums of money were removed from government's income. And then, of course, public sector pensions came into stark sort of focus, because it was clearly unaffordable at that time. Whereas before, as I think you rightly pointed out there, Gerry, maybe the eye was off the ball, because actually it wasn't a problem in earlier days. That issue, though, with interest rates, I mean, that would be an interest. Well, certainly for me, it was interesting when I was a minister to discover that these significant deficits can disappear relatively quickly, depending on where your interest rate is. How does that work?
I'll hand you over to Kath, because this is technical, but please do not believe that this is going to disappear quickly. We would love it to disappear quickly, but as to use Mr. Thomas's words, there's no silver bullet.
Yeah,
this is going to take a long time to work its way through. It's happening. Analogy would be, if it's an oil tanker, we haven't turned it round yet, but we've slowed it down and are able to start the turn. But we are working towards it, but it's not going to happen overnight. And we'd hate to mislead the listeners and the public by saying that we're right on top of this, it's going to disappear. But it isn't. Mm. But we are making progress. And perhaps if Kath can explain the effect of interest.
I mean, I'm not an actuary, so I can't talk with any great detail about the way in which an actuary or an accountant may value the liabilities. But essentially, what you have when we talk about the billion, the 2 or 3 billion of liabilities, is a figure that they put an actuarial figure on it. And essentially, it's a figure that's never going to be realised, because it looks at the very, very long-term cost of the current liability of the pension schemes. The thing to really focus on, and where we look at, is the cash flow. It's the money that comes in, the income that comes in from member and employer contributions, and the expenditure, what we pay out in pensions at the, you know, throughout the year. And that's how Treasury essentially manage, you know, on a year-to-year basis. Now, these schemes are all unfunded pay-as-you-go schemes. And they have been like that for many, many years, from when the first public sector scheme in the Isle of Man started, which I understand to be in the late 40s, early 50s. So these pay-as-you-go schemes, members pay in, and as they eventually retired, the contributions that were coming in from the members that were paying in would pay their pensions. But as the island grew and the public service grew to support the island, the more members were coming in, and more members were paying a contribution. But then these members started to retire. Those that were working in the 80s and the 90s started to retire. So the balance of income and the balance of expenditure really moved over, so there was a less coming in than there was going out. But that was the policy of the day. The government of the day accepted that, because the money was coming in. I understand that some of that money wasn't, there was no pension fund, so they built up what they called a pension reserve fund. But a lot of the money essentially that was coming in would have been used for other government capital projects, because that's how the government budget itself on a year-on basis. So where we found ourselves in the 2000s was the realisation of this debt And is it a debt to the public sector pensioners that have paid in? And are what we're doing now, one could say that we're just evening up the balance, because these people, through the policy that they signed up to, and it's not policy, it's legislation, so it's set out in statute, that they would pay that contribution. And in turn, the government would give them that benefit. So those members, people might say, well, it is a large cost, but it is actually part of the rules and regulations of the time. So when the PSPA came in 2012, we were charged with putting more accountability. So we have to produce annual accounts. We have to do triannual actuarial valuation reports. So we now have a real handle on how the schemes are funding, what the money looks like coming in, what the money looks like coming out. We have projections of what the fund will be in the years to come, because obviously we can't say with any great certainty when people are going to die, people are going to leave.
All this is a lot easier,
yes,
having one scheme rather than having a dozen or more schemes.
I mean, all those schemes, it was to administrate them for the first start, but was very, very, right. There was, yeah, close to 26. Yeah. So getting back to the real question, in terms of affordability and sustainabilities of the scheme, the last actuarial valuation showed that all the reforms that have been made over the years are having a positive effect on the schemes. The funding gap or the deficit, that's not going to go away. That will go away in time. So what we will find and what we expect to see is a build-up. So there will be an increase in that debt because you've got the schemes maturing. So all those pensioners still getting their pension, there'll be more people joining them. And because people are living longer, which is also a factor, because our health services are doing a great job, we've all given up smoking and we're all looking after ourselves. So as people get older, they're going to live longer. So the pensions are being paid for longer. So the mortality elements have an impact on the cost of a pension scheme. And all those things are taken into account, as well as salaries increasing. Because as you know, our pension schemes are based on salaries. So as they increase, the cost increase. So all of those factors are taken into account. So that funding gap will go up, but eventually it will start to drop off as the people with the cheaper benefits and those that have paid more for what they're getting come through.
So effectively, those are the people from the 2012 reform onwards.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, going back to the point, you know, that there's two things. The funding gap is one thing, and that's being managed because we think at the moment, well, we know at the moment in nominal terms, the funding gap will increase over time. And the cost of the funding gap to the government, i.e. as a percentage of its general revenue, because that's essentially where it's funded from, the impact will eventually go down. So we're not going to see it increase. I think it's just going to steadily increase for a bit, and then it will stabilise and then it will drop off. So that's being managed under Treasury's medium to long-term funding plan. So they've, after the debates that we had in Tynwald in 2018, when we looked at ways in which we could manage the legacy gap in a different way, it was decided, Tynwald decided, that we'd introduce a DC scheme, which we can talk about. And one of the other things was introduce cost sharing. And today, obviously, that's why we're here, to talk about the consultation on cost sharing. But what cost sharing does, it doesn't look at the legacy, because there's only so much you can do. You know, more money coming in, less money going out. That's kind of how the legacy is going to be managed. But what we are looking at is the cost of a pension benefit. So what does it cost? And we put a cost on it, which is a percentage of an employee's pay. And going back to the unified scheme, that scheme was set up in 2012. But what we did do is, from that date, anybody new joined a cheaper scheme, essentially. So they're getting a lower rate of benefit, but paying more than they would have done. But now we've got over 70% of employees sit within that cheaper section. So it's really interesting, out of, you know, the last sort of 13, 14 years or so, that all the new employees are coming through and they're sitting in that cheaper section. So it's coming through quite quickly. I mean, back in 2012, when we were looking at how we can reform public sector pension schemes, you know, we did, one option we put on the table was, let's go really cheap. Let's go in there, cheap scheme, pay a significant contribution, but get a lot less. And there was lots of negotiation with unions and debate about it politically as well. And it was concluded, well, we won't do that. We don't want to go that far. We want to have a balance because we still, as Jerry said at the beginning, we still have to attract and get good people into the public service to provide the range of skills we need. So that was still a factor as well. So recruitment and retention is key as well. And also, we need to ensure that we're supporting our employees into their retirement. It's not a race to the bottom. We have to ensure, I think, that people have a good level of income and then they have a good lifestyle when they retire. And also they're on the island, they're able to pay, support the economy locally and not have the reliance on the state as if what may happen if they didn't have a good level of income. So getting that balance right, being able to give a good pension scheme offering, but also being able to balance the books and be accountable to the taxpayer, of course, of which many public all public servants are taxpayers too. So it is getting that balance right. So in 2012, we didn't go hard on the reforms, but we brought in the unified scheme, and we were already seeing a large
and
proportion
actually, that in
of
itself,
cheaper members coming through.
That was quite radical.
Yes.
At the time,
yes, it was.
It wasn't an easy ask the various public sector unions and representatives that were negotiating.
I'm wholly independent. I don't have a public sector pension. I could look at this very objectively, and I think a point that perhaps people aren't aware of is that the reforms have only been achieved because we have a very hard-working executive within the PSPA who have built up a very good rapport and a high degree and level of trust and respect with the employees and the employees' representatives. And had the employees, the people who actually are members of the schemes, the public sector, not been as realistic and pragmatic about reforms and been prepared to embrace reforms because they realised it was essential to do that. Had they not been so pragmatic, we would have been in a mess, frankly. And everybody likes, it's fashionable to moan about the size of the public sector and whatever, but please remember that the public sector employees have had a vital role to play in the reforms. It couldn't happen without them. And the reforms have been achieved without one day of industrial action or a single legal challenge in the courts. It's been dealt with by consensus and negotiation, which I always think that's how the Isle of Man works best.
Yeah.
But that's for another day. But it's and we must not play down the terribly important role that the employees and their representatives have contributed to the reforms that we've achieved.
One thing, and I think from what you've already said, it's easy to answer this question, but a question that often comes up when we're talking about public sector pensions is, well, what we need to do is close the scheme for all future entrants because it's unaffordable, it needs to go. So effectively, they buy into a discrete scheme, they pay their contributions in, and at the end of their career, they then get their money out from that scheme. It's, effectively, that's how it works in the private sector. Why can't that work in the public sector?
There is a... Treasury insisted that we resourced a defined contribution scheme. Now, if we went back to 2012, when pensions were in a mess, I think a lot of members would have opted to go for a defined contribution scheme. Since the defined contribution scheme, which is an option for everybody, has been introduced, nobody's taken it up. Now, one of the reasons that they've not taken it up, and this was brought home to me recently, is that they now have confidence that the defined benefit schemes, which the unfunded schemes we have, are sustainable and are going to be around. And I think that's a big improvement, and that is a very big endorsement for the success of the reforms that's taken place. If we were to impose defined contribution schemes only, I suppose it could be done. That would require significant legislative changes. Kath, what?
I think it has been considered. So back in 2018, the Cabinet Office and the PSPA submitted a report to Tynwald that sort of set out a number of ways potentially in which we could address the legacy funding gap and closing the schemes to new entrants and switch into a defined contribution scheme was considered. But it was discounted because of the loss of the contributions from the new employees. So when we did the figures, I think the loss of the income coming in to meet the legacy that we're having to pay for would have been gone. And as well as that, the member contributions, there would have been an employer contribution as well, because the Isle of Man government, like any other good employer, would want to support their employees by paying a contribution. So it would mean that that money would leave government entirely and it would go to a defined contribution scheme. We couldn't administer a defined contribution scheme in-house the way we do our schemes via legislation. They have to be on an insured basis. So one would go to the high street, as it were, and pick a defined contribution scheme that was being sold on the Isle of Man, potentially by an insurance company, one would assume. So that was the thought. So that money would leave the Isle of Man government. Yes, they wouldn't have the risk of that pension in the future because that would be down to the individual. They'll pay their contribution in and they'll get whatever return that policy gave them.
But of course, they would still have the risk of everyone who had formerly been in the old scheme. So that risk wouldn't go away. And if we thought the problem was difficult before, if all new entrants left, it would be a massive
so
issue.
When we looked at the figures, I think you'd still be looking at a significant cost for the next 50 plus years, because you've got all the people that are pensioner now and you've got everybody else that's in the scheme, the 8,500 people plus that currently have a memberships in the scheme. So they'll all be sat there going, well, I've still got a pension, I'm still paying in. So the balance, the thought at that time was, it wasn't doable. I suppose it could have been done if Treasury had wanted to sort of get loans. So we looked at, loans. That was really all discounted as being something that we weren't that Tynwald weren't inclined to support. So it was all considered, and there's an interesting report which is on our website, which was the Cabinet Office and the report. So that was debated around about 2018, and at that time we also looked at a number of measures, and they were all really discounted because, as Mr. Thomas said, there was no silver bullet.
And Mr. Thomas at the time
beg your pardon, he was the deputy chair of the PSPA. That was, so at that time we had lots of workshops with Tynwald members. We went through everything that our actuaries, there was a range of two actuaries actually that were involved. We had an independent actuary came in to say, he could do this. And so we had a really, really good session. So we really got to the bottom of all the options open to us. They were sort of considered in great detail. And what we came out with was, we set up, as Joey said, a defined contribution scheme for new employees only. And they get the option to join, the public sector schemes or the defined benefit schemes that we have, or the defined contribution scheme. And some people consider it because for some people it might be a good option for them. But at the moment, nobody's joined it in the last few years that it's been open.
And politically, this is a great stick that anyone standing for the House of Keys can beat current MHKs about, isn't it, Jerry? I mean, they'll say, yes, but you should, this is a disgrace, and look at all this money that we're spending. But you can understand why someone who's hoping to become an MHK might look for sticks to beat people with. Is that kind of an unfair framing of the argument? Because effectively, going back to what you both said at the start, this is about giving your employees reasonable terms and conditions.
I'm going to stay out of any political debate.
We're
charged with administering the schemes and looking at reforms, and we're doing the best we can. And we genuinely believe that the reforms are starting to bite now, and the position is improving. It's the job of candidates, I suppose, and it's the job of people who aren't in government, or perhaps we don't have an official opposition or leader of the opposition, we don't have party politics. And I suppose they're charged with holding the government to account for all their policies, not just pensions. And everybody you meet, there are certain jobs they could do. They could manage the England football team better than whoever the manager is. In the Isle of Man, everyone thinks they can manage the steam packet. Everyone thinks they could run a pub.
They can all run the Department of Infrastructure.
Department of Infrastructure. And I think people genuinely believe that they could sort all these problems out with the Treasury have. This is Treasury who've been through COVID, been through, as you say, the VAT crisis around about 2009. There was the banking crisis, of course, in those days. We've had a massive contraction of the e-gaming sector. All these things Treasury have to deal with. And you'll know more than most, it's much easier to be on the outside sniping than to actually get in and find solutions to things.
And of course, the other pension that's paid out by government is the state pension.
I know, it's wonderful. I've just got mine. I'm sure.
but that's effectively a similar sort of thing. You know, that there's a national insurance fund. Yeah. I mean, we're lucky that we never did what the Thatcher government did and completely did away with their national insurance fund. But the national insurance fund funds part of the pensions, but it's also funded through national insurance contributions from people paying in at the moment. So it's a similar scheme, basically, to the public sector pension scheme.
In that it's unfunded, yes, it is. And I think, personally, as I'm in receipt of an old age pension and I have a bus pass and free prescriptions, I think it's brilliant. Bring it on. But
and of course, an MHK or a wannabe MHK standing at an election certainly wouldn't be going after that pension scheme.
No, they wouldn't.
That
wouldn't be a great vote winner, would
no,
it?
I don't think so.
But I think the important thing that we can evidence, we deal in facts, not myths, and since, the PSPA has been here since 2012, we've had four actuarial valuations that are all published on our website. We've had the reports that I referred to. We've had back in 2014 and then in 2017-18, Tim Wald looked at public sector pension schemes. And, we can list the reforms that we've made since that time. Essentially, people paying more and getting less. We're here, obviously, today we're consulting on cost sharing, which is, looks at the cost of members' pension schemes into the future. So I think we've got everything in place, all the mechanisms that we can think of to monitor, to ensure the schemes remain affordable and sustainable. We're always looking at ways, in the past, in how we can manage these costs. And the PSPA has a statutory duty to ensure that it always looks at its counterparts in other jurisdictions. Well, what are they doing? What's new for them? Why are they doing that? Can we do that? So there's all sorts of things that we can do and that we will be doing and we have to do in terms to ensure these schemes keep pace with the modern way of working, the fact that essentially people are going to have to work longer and probably have an expectation. I think many 20, 30-year-olds today are thinking, well, what's a pension? I'll never have one. There's all those sorts of things. And we're also having to ensure that with the younger generations coming through, that they know that there's this good facility here because they may not be able to afford to contribute to a pension when they can't afford to save for their own house or to move out and get their own place. So there's all those things that we're dealing with as well. That's very different from a generation 30, even 20 years ago. So we're having to ensure that our pension schemes remain relevant to the younger employees so the public service can keep servicing.
It's actually a good problem to have that people are living longer and healthier lives. Yes. That isn't a bad thing, per se.
No, but I think, with any new MHK, we certainly, with any new administration, as soon as they're appointed, we book in their diaries and say, come and talk to us about public sector pensions and we'll tell you what we're about and what we're up to and what we're looking at. Just to give them some reassurance, they may take it or not, they may not see it as reassurance that we are tackling it and the PSPA is addressing it and doing as much as we can, working with Treasury, of course, and Council of Ministers to ensure that these schemes remain affordable into the future.
And maybe a funding deficit is an unfortunate term, but where are we at in terms of that deficit in the overall, you know, in this year's budget, for example?
Well, at the moment, up to the last year, it was 48 million. Hmm. Yeah, a year, yeah. And that's the shortfall between income and expenditure. And then on top of that, also, the government pay a 15% of pay in terms of employer contributions. So I think that's around 60 million on top of that. So it is a hefty amount of money. But the thing to remember is that deficit was built up over many years when the scheme was unfunded. It is still unfunded. It's still
and
a pay-as-you-go.
It's probably unfair to mention the employer contribution, bearing in mind that in most big organisations, whether they're public or private sector, the employer and
would
the employee would...
That's a very important distinction, I think, because if you're looking at a defined contribution scheme, then as Kath says, it's going possibly with Aviva or someone like that, but the government's paying in every month their contributions, and that's coming out of revenue. Mm. So there's no shortcuts, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Mm. But of course, the bit that is the one that most people will focus on, it's that 48 million, which in terms of state pension would come out of things like the National Insurance Fund, the interest and the income that's generated from that. But there is no public sector pension fund left.
And that was government policy at the time, not to have a fund.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was introduced, but it quickly, that reserve was quickly used up, wasn't it? So in terms then specifically about the consultation, when's it close is the first thing?
Well, it closes on the 19th of September. So it's a consultation, just is an internal consultation because it's just with current active scheme members, their unions and representatives. So we've written out to all the members so that they'll know where they can look to find information about the changes that the PSPA are proposing. And that's essentially to share the saving via increased accrual rates. And for teachers, there's increased accrual rates, 1% reduction in contributions, and then an adjustment to the factor or the exchange rate, because they're allowed to commute some of their pension in terms of a lump sum. So we've used some of the saving to reduce that as well. So these determinations is that the PSPA board made this determination after consultation with the unions, because that's what the cost-sharing scheme required them to do. So those the proposals that we've put forward, the PSPA have determined those. They've been agreed in principle with the unions as a fair way. So we'll be adjusting accrual rate. So once the consultation is finished, the board will then consider all the feedback that we've had, and we're starting to get feedback in now. And then once we've considered that feedback, if the board determine that we'll go ahead, then we will submit that amending legislation up to Tynwald. And it's for Tynwald. If they approve those changes, then we would anticipate that we'll make administratively the changes from April 26. But we'll have to backdate them as the regulations require to backdate some changes to April 24. So if approved, because it's obviously the key thing to make clear to any public sector pension scheme members is that everything that the PSPA does has to be approved by Tynwald.
And of course, they may not be.
And they may not.
May be that a different outcome is agreed.
We'll hopefully they'll approve it. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Yeah. Of course, if there's any change to any scheme, we are obliged by statute to have a consultation period. And we have adopted purposive interpretation, and we believe that consultation is proper consultation and make sure, for example, it may be that some of the manual worker schemes, they're not going to go to a wine bar on a Friday evening and play on their laptop and read things there. And so you've got to communicate to people in a medium that they're going to understand and take on board. And we've gone to great lengths to do that. We don't just like the sort of one-size-fits-all approach, because you have to make sure that you are resonating with the members so that they've been given every opportunity to consider.
And pensions, apologies to Kath on this, but as soon as the word pension is mentioned, I find myself starting to want to drift, you know, to daydream. Oh. But to most people, most government workers, it's not really a big deal at the time, you know, because most, I guess, are on maybe under 40, under 50, maybe by the time you get to 50, it starts to become more important.
But I think over the years we've done a considerable amount of engagement. Obviously, we've had to because of what we've done and in terms of changing. So I think the knowledge and understanding is certainly growing. So I would like to think that there are more people, more public sector employees that know more about their pension now than they ever did. And we also will be introducing a new app, which we're very excited about. So so members will be able to have an app on their phone, and they will just be able to sit and look at, you know, they could put in a retirement date, whenever that might be, and get an estimate of what their pension may be. We'll also be able to talk to them about survivors' benefits, cover for death in service. So, you know, are they aware of what happens if they die? Have they done what they need to do? So we'll be able to constantly engage with members. And there's lots of different things that impact pension. If maternity leave, for instance, if there's unpaid maternity leave, that can impact on your pension. So we're doing lots of engagement with members now. So I would say the knowledge base has increased significantly over the last 15 years.
I think a manifestation was that was when the cost sharing was debated in Timbald, the quality of the debate in Timbald was extremely high. I remember Steve Roden, the president, saying, "Sorry, Gerry, it's not like that normally." But sorry, I don't want to decry the members or anything. But I was singularly impressed how well prepared and knowledgeable all the members of Timbald were when debating the subject. Now, we had a lot of workshops and roadshows and that, but it's clear that when Timbald considered this, they really did their homework. And I think people are more aware now as to what's involved with public sector pensions and the sort of everyday terms like sort of defined benefits, defined contributions or whatever, unfunded schemes, legacy gap. I think the average person, what Deemster Tattersall used to say, the right thinking man on the Douglas horse tram, are far a lot more savvy now, as Kath was saying, and we're very pleased about that, because we this is a lot of government, there's a lot of taxpayers' money, and the public are entitled to know what we're doing about it and how we're going about it.
And again, I imagine some members of the public will say, well, if there's a cost saving, why are you sharing it back with the employees when it could go to pay off part of the deficit? I think you've already answered the question, but I'll pose that anyway.
It's the contributions are towards the employee's future pension, not towards the legacy gap. They're two separate things. And ultimately, the contributions are the employee's money. So they've agreed that they'll go for the accruals, because nobody wants a roller coaster effect where your pension contributions go down significantly and then they may go up significantly the next time. That's very hard to budget domestically. So they've agreed that the increased accruals will take most of this. But ultimately, it would be like imposing a stealth tax on people in the public sector to pay for previous liabilities that the government have accumulated.
And I guess the representatives, the union representatives of the public sector workers, would say, if you did pull a stunt like that, oh, well, we'll never trust you again.
Well, and that's the thing. And also, it's the regulations, the cost-sharing scheme, which was debated at length, and lots of negotiation and work went into that. And it was a long, hard mechanism and scheme to put together. That dictates that we do what we do. So we can't work outside of those regulations. So essentially, if we did anything different, then I would expect to have legal challenges from the unions and the members say, well, that's what you said you'll do, so that's what you do it. And cost sharing is symmetrical, and it's a key important point to make that the scheme, whilst we may have we've had a cost saving this time, it may not be the case when, you know, if there's another cost sharing which is due in 2028. So we may find, when we look at the assumptions that have been set for that cost sharing, that they haven't been realised. So there may be an increase in cost. So it's important for members to understand that whilst we're given a saving now, there may not be a saving next time, and it could be an increase in cost. So going back to your question, well, if there's a saving, why isn't it given being back? So if there's an increase, you know, would the same be true? So our members are expecting, you know, if there's an increase, they'll say, OK, well, we understand that. So, yes, essentially there could be an increase in contributions, or the rate at which their pension builds up will come down. So the years of having a stagnant entitlement to a public sector pension, so I know when I join on that date and I leave on that date, that's what I'm going to get. Those days have gone. So I think there will be variations over the years to ensure that we keep that balance of costs under control and we stay with, and those costs stay contained. And the way we're doing it through cost sharing is to, you know, share the savings, but also pull back when there's an increase in cost. And the other thing to bear in mind, in the past, before cost sharing, any fluctuations in cost would have been met by the government. So if there was a saving, there would have been a saving. So there'd have been less being paid out that year. And if there'd been an increase, of course, there would have been an increase. So it's a symmetrical thing. So that's a key point to bear in mind as for members as well, because whilst they may get an increase, it may be a different story when the next valuation take place.
And it would be unlikely, wouldn't it, when effectively you're going out to ask the public sector workers, the members of the scheme, would you like us to increase the benefit, that they're going to say no?
Well, it's an interesting point, because just having a quick look at some of the feedback we've had, people have said, well, is this going to change again? And think, well, yes, it will. And, you know, they said, how do we plan? And that's why, as Jerry said, we haven't touched contributions, because people know what they're paying. They're comfortable with what they're paying, because they're paying it. So let's keep that. So we've kept the contribution, so we've kept the income the same, and looked at changing the accrual rate, which is a cost that won't necessarily be met until those individuals actually retire later in the future.
And I think we're getting towards the end of the programme, sadly. Final comment or two then, is the public sector pension safe in the public sector pension authority's hands?
Oh, that's, I could be very conceited and say, of course it is. As long as there is goodwill between the employees and the Public Sector Pensions Authority, as long as we have a progressive executive, and it's been a privilege working with several boards who have been very progressive as well, and as long as Tim Walt remain prepared to hit the problems head on rather than kick the can down the road, then I think there is an extremely good chance that the public sector pensions will remain sustainable and will become less of a burden to the public purse over a period of time.
Yes, I think certainly, as I said, the work that we've done and the changes that we've implemented over the last 15 years and the way our plans for the future, I think certainly public sector pensions are in the good hands of the Public Sector Pensions Authority. We are a statutory board with a set of statutory responsibilities that we take, you know, very seriously. And we publish our accounts, we do our actuarial reports, we have a great administration team. We've just recently procured a new administration system, which has allowed us to bring us into the 21st century. We're making lots of efficiencies through there. And there will be an app, and, you know, we're really, really excited and positive for the future. You know, as Jerry said, working with the board, a progressive board as well, and we hope that we will be bringing lots of ideas in ways that we can essentially make our schemes more appropriate for younger members, but whilst also bearing in mind that we have to keep them affordable and sustainable into the future.
And finally, the public sector pension is not overly generous compared with what you might get in the private sector now.
We've looked at some figures, and last year the UK government reported that the average pension, I think it was just around about £12,000 a year. And looking at the average pension that we paid out last year in the unified scheme, it just came under about £11,500. So these myths of gold-plated pensions are very much not the case.
That was the Public Sector Pensions Authority Chair Gerry Carter and CEO Catherine Brandon. I'm Phil Gorn, Goramayos and Geisakrom. Thanks for listening.